Welcome to the All Souls Forum here on KKFI. Today's speaker is Charlotte O'Neill, the wife of former Kansas City Black Panther Pete O'Neill. She's going to talk about her extraordinary life with Pete and some other things that she's involved in that might be of interest to you all. As usual, we will have our talk for about 30 minutes. We'll take a short break, and we'll do the question and answer period for you. This program was recorded on Sunday, March the 30th. At the All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church in Kansas City, Missouri. Let's hear from our introductory speaker, and then we will hear from Charlotte O'Neill.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the forum at All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church. We were very fortunate to have Charlotte Mama C. Hill O'Neill here March 8th in the evening, but one of the things I said when we made plans is you absolutely must speak at the forum. And so she is here for a second time. Now, I'm Carolyn McDonald, a longtime member of the Forum Committee, and one of the stories I always heard when I moved here in the very early 70s was we had Pete O'Neill speak here at the Forum when he was leader of the local Black Panther Party group. And so then, when there was the opportunity to have the young woman who was a young Black Panther who married Pete come, we picked the center of the stage because we think that's probably where someone at that time was standing. I wasn't here, but we used to have the podium in the center, so probably that's where he is. So we're very pleased to have her with us. She's going to speak for half an hour or so, and then we'll take a little break and take up a collection, and then we'll go ahead with question and answers. So, Charlotte, go ahead.
I'm so happy to be back because, like Carolyn said, I was here. When was that? Like last month, I think it was. Yes, and we had a good time. And there were a lot of questions also, so I hope we have some interaction, some dialogue, some questions today because I love that. I'm so happy that my daughter is here today. A Reverend Mann, who I've known since I was 18 years old, is here. Brother Merle is here. And Brother Earl, his twin is Merle, is here. And, you know, we were all a part of the community service that was paramount in our lives and continues to be very, very important in our lives today. You know, I've been on a tour since last month. And one of the things, one of my missions, one of my passions is to make sure that people have the correct history of what the Black Panther Party was all about. And also the fact that that community service continues all the way over in East Africa in Tanzania at the United African Alliance Community Center. You know, I feel so blessed that I've been able to do work like this since I was a young teenager. You know, being a member of the Black Panther Party taught me to work hard. It taught me to look at myself as a member of the global community. It taught me to make sure to build international solidarity. And for you who might not know a lot about the Black Panther Party, you might be shocked because the media depicted us in such a bad light. Huh? Of course, the party started out as a self-defense group, but it went beyond that. It went beyond that because we saw much of the need of the community. We saw that there were hundreds of children who were having to go to school every day without adequate breakfast. One of the fundamental things you have if you're going to learn. And we addressed that. We addressed that situation. We saw that we needed more free medical clinics. We started the first medical clinic from the Black Panther Party in all the chapters. I don't know if you knew, brother, that ours was the first one. It was the free Bobby Hutton Medical Clinic. And we were teenagers, a lot of us. You know, so when I go to these universities and talk to these young people, you know, who say, oh, there's nothing that we can do in this world to make a change, I say, we were younger than you all were and we did it. We did it, and our focus was building community. Huh? And I always tell them also that you don't have to have an organization. You can be a one-man, one-woman organization, and before you know it, your influence will spread. Huh? There simply is no excuse these days for not doing something in this world that needs so much change, whether it's environmentally, whether it's food justice, whether it's addressing the situation of the hundreds and hundreds of political prisoners who are still held captive here in America. And I bet many of you didn't know that America has more people in prison than any country in the world. Did y'all know that? You know, now if that situation doesn't need addressing, then I don't know what does. I'm reading this really good book now. It's called The New Jim Crow. So write that down, y'all. That is a good, good book that has so many facts that'll blow your mind, huh? Oh, good. Well, I don't know where that voice came from, but right on. Yes, yeah. You know, even me saying right on, so many people don't realize that came from the Black Panther Party. Right on. Huh? I think we got a lot of 60s people up in here. Huh? Yes, yeah. So, I grew up in Kansas City, Kansas, in a hard-working community, a community that where we could get everything we needed, from our groceries to our dry cleaning to our schools to our churches. You know, I grew up in a community that cared about each other. And so that marked me. That marked me as much as being a Black Panther continues to mark me and inform everything that I do. I'll never forget those experiences. I'll never forget how, as a student at Wyandotte High School, anybody from that area? Yes, my sister Nedra. Yay, Bulldogs. That I was invited to give history lessons in African history to some of the classes when I was 17 years old. And that's because I had become a member of the Kansas City School of Human Dignity. Huh? And that's what we did. We would go to different schools and different churches and community centers, and we would share our knowledge about African history, a history that made me so proud and continues to make me proud. And this history that I continue to share with the young children that we work with in Tanzania. When I would read about all the happenings in Africa, I never thought I'd actually be living in Africa, where we've lived since 1970, actually, since we left. Yes. And what a blessing it has been. It has been a pure and true blessing. When you consider the fact that if my husband, Brother Pete O'Neill, hadn't gone into exile and me with him, and I was the tender age of 19 when we left, and I'm the not-so-tender age of 63 now. This is our 45th year together. And I got to say right on to that, because these days marriages somehow don't last that long. I mean, 45 years, that's a long time to be working with somebody, to be building with somebody, to be living our dreams and our passions, to be able to influence so many young people and even some elders from all over the world. What a blessing that is. But let me go back a little ways and tell you how we ended up in exile. I think most of you all are pretty politically astute already, so you might already know about COINTELPRO and how the Black Panther Party was targeted, how Reverend Martin Luther King was targeted, how Malcolm X was targeted. And it's like as soon as a person started talking about human rights, as soon as a person started building coalitions with people from whatever community, whatever race, whatever gender, then they were targeted. Huh? That's what happened to him. That's what happened to him, and that's what happened to a lot of our comrades who remain in prison. Some have even been killed because of their beliefs. But if he hadn't decided to go, I doubt if we would have been able to build what we have built with our own hands, huh? With our own hands and with the knowledge that we gained from Mother Earth catalog, which I bet a lot of y'all probably know about that too, because we became farmers, huh? We became homesteaders. We became pioneers. And again, my experience as a young girl in Kansas City, where I grew up around people who knew how to work and who knew how to share, that really, really helped us. That really helped us. And even when we would get, I still got calluses here, but when we would get our calluses, you know, and bleeding palms from Karen Brick. Stormy, you remember that, huh? Because she participated in it too. All eyes. You know, because Stormy grew up in Tanzania. She was born in Tanzania. And she knows what hard work is also. So I feel very, very blessed to share these experiences as much as I can, because I know that these experiences can help influence, indeed help change somebody else's life. I could talk about this forever. I really, really could. It might be even better if we interject questions and don't wait till the end. I don't know. I don't know if that's cool. You see, I'm so sick.
It works a lot better if we consolidate the questions, because it's recorded and it'll be played back on KKFI, our community radio station, in a couple of weeks. So, but you can just end your comments a little bit early so that we can have more time for questions. Okay. So talk for us a little bit more, though, first.
Okay. All right. Okay, I've touched on my childhood some. And, of course, church played a big part in my life. I was a member of Strangers Rest Baptist Church from cradle roll until I was a teenager, until I left. You know, and my mom was a church pianist and the organist. So, you know, I know about gospel because we used to rock in the church. If that's okay, I can use that term. But we did, you know, and I think that has influenced my life as a musician, huh? Because there's something about those gospel vibes, especially when a church is community service-based, that touches my heart and touches my soul. Let me share an experience with you all that I just had in Baltimore. This was last week. When I walked in that church, I'd been invited to speak. And as soon as I walked in that church, it's the Pleasant Hope Baptist Church. I'd never been there before. And the musician was on that organ. I said, uh-oh, you're in trouble now. Because when I heard that organ, I could hear my mom, you know. I could just hear it. And even though I was supposed to just get up and speak, I got up and started moaning. I just moaned, yeah. Whoa, 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 whoa. And before I knew it, I was singing full out. I must have sang maybe 10 minutes before I started my talk, you know. So it's something about those church vibes that also becomes embedded in you, because community service is supposed to be based in religion or spirituality. And sometimes those can be considered two different things. I know that. A person can be as religious as they want to be, but the spirituality might not be there. Community service is a way to honor the Creator and to honor the ancestors. And that's what I do. That's what we do. And I have to emphasize that Brother Pete O'Neill is looked at with honor all over the world. People come to our community center to learn from here, to learn from him, to learn from his example. Huh? We have free classes for youth and elders in our community every day. English, computer studies, arts, music, crafts, fine art, building construction, yoga, sports, and all of our teachers are volunteers. Many of them are young people. So it's that spirit of volunteerism that we had so strong as members of the Black Panther Party that continues. My sister Nedra has been there as a volunteer teaching art. I hope you don't mind me mentioning it. You know, so that's what it takes also. You can't be paid for everything you do. Sometimes being paid takes away the value. So that is a legacy that we have laid down in a village in Tanzania, Embassani Village, that has just spread. It's like we have planted seeds and have watched those seeds just flourish. So when times get hard for us, we just think of that and say, hey, it's worth it, y'all. We also have a children's home where we're raising 22 children. Some of these children are orphans. Some of them just come from really difficult circumstances. And all of them are beautiful and smart and respectful and kind and creative. That's what we're trying to do. Raise up leaders for tomorrow, but doing it right now, right today. I was also in Troy, New York, which is in Albany. And this was, again, a few days ago. And they had invited me there at the Sanctuary for Independent Media. And they said they had been having many instances of police brutality there in that community. And they wanted me to bring the Heal the Community tour there and see what I could do to talk to some of these young people. So I suggested, because hip-hop, conscious hip-hop, is such a widespread language of young people, no matter where they are on the planet, whether it's Siberia or Brazil or Tanzania or Kansas City. Actually, I don't know how conscious hip-hop is here. It's not happening. Well, we're going to have to bring it here, too, because hip-hop can be such a tool for personal empowerment and for community empowerment. So I went there and I asked some of the youth that we work with in Tanzania, because we have a recording studio there, and all of them are conscious hip-hoppers. I asked them to create some tracks and had these young people write lyrics off the top of their head that express how they thought healing the community, healing themselves, could take place. So we did that. We performed it. Some of these youth had never been on a microphone before. But it's something about having a mic, access to that mic, that makes you just feel strong, you know? And that's how these youth did. They expressed themselves, and they made a video of it. And you all can find it online, actually, at Independent Sanctuary for Independent Media. Check it out. I think it's titled Mama Sees Heal the Community. And you will be so proud of what those youth put together. And I see that everywhere. I always tell elders, if you want to make a connection with youth these days, you better know something about hip-hop. It's true. And you better be able to give an example, a positive example of what you can do through that media, through that art. And I take that even further, because I'm a visual artist and a poet also. And I like the young people that we work with to realize the power that they have in just a brush, in a paintbrush. I've seen young women in our village who have come to our center who, when they first get there, are so shy because they've never been exposed to a means of expressing themselves creatively, at least not with a paintbrush. And once they get those paintbrushes in their hands, and Nedra, you've seen that, it's like they just change, you know, and they walk with a straighter back, you know, because the community recognizes them as artists. That's one of the things I love to emphasize to our children. We say, we want you to have the opportunity, if you want to be a doctor or a lawyer or a chef or a teacher or whatever you want to be, make sure that you also realize your artistic creativity. And all of us should do that, huh? It doesn't matter if we elders. We still got that fire of creativity burning. A fire of creativity that we need to spread to other people, whether they are youth or elders themselves. Huh? When I go around to some of these schools that I speak at, and I tell you, I've been from the West Coast to the East Coast to the Midwest and back and forth. I've been on at least 20 flights since I've been here in the States since February. I tell people, don't forget about food justice. And that there's so many empty lots in all these cities that I see that could be turned in to food. That is a way to build community also. Huh? If you get 10 people who are working the land, and once they see those collards coming up and those carrots and those tomatoes, it's almost a festive kind of thing, huh? Where you can gather your own food and then take it as gifts to the elders and teach the children how to work the land, huh? So there's all kind of areas that we can all contribute to make this world a better place. No doubt. Okay, this is a music video, and it's in tribute to our comrade, Brother Geronimo Jijaga, who was instrumental in bringing water to our village in Tanzania, because before he gave us the means to dig this well, people were having to carry water on their head, mostly women and young girls, and walk for miles because there was no running water. He was a political prisoner for 27 years. When he was released, the United States government paid him compensation for having locked him up and spent all of his youth in prison. He came to us and asked us what could he do to help us. We said, water, brother. And he gave us the means to do that. He came, he loved Tanzania so much, he came to our village, built a house, and was living there, but a couple of years ago, tragically, he passed away. This is a tribute to him, and will show you a glimpse into some of the conscious hip-hop that I've been talking about, because these are top artists who came to our center so that they could do this tribute. So please enjoy this. Rest in Uhuru, and Uhuru means freedom. This is for Brother G.
Move fire. Goes out to our brother, Jijaga. Jijaga. Rest in your Uhuru. Zake zitabaki kama spirit ya kupaki kwenye mikanda mio wapendaki kwa mana na kate lipigenia haki za mablaki kupindo utawala Amerika chini ya mawaisi ametutoka tutakuwa ne tena kama mjema ila tutakuwa ne tena kwa madini ya yotema ulale pema kama tulia daima esima nusumai zimiki kuonesha wako wema miaka 67 jela kwa masela unatofoti na Mandela what I remember kwa Jijaga he was a good fella kipuli cha haki kwenye jua ni umbrella rest in you popote ulipokwenda tutakuremember January to December tutazidi kuendeleza kwa yalo lotujenga versus physical. No fade away, keep hope alive, never go astray. Strategize, sacrifice, every step of the way. Analyze, sanctify, at the end of the day. I brought the gene, the jewel will go free, me lele. With my rest of peace, no shame, miss me a relic. With me touch a sis, see walk, if you could super now. In a question, so leave your physical, we'll see to build a mouth. If I was dish, and speakers when they call St. Chris. For what vision, a new leaders in the mark of speech. Our Max, Mosiah, lady, black man speech. Right, so high, I cut the sky. I'm the best in the beer, so this sense of less liquor special. So cast lessons I get, so not less. If I'm in front, new and points come my decimals. If I produce nine, come my flows and my estimals.
We always do remember you. Jungles of Vietnam, a true backwoods warrior, urban soldier, panther spirit general. And G loved to be out in nature, getting the sight of flowers, birds, and trees. Those who really knew him were not surprised at the ease that he flowed into a new life at the foot of Maidens' feet. Curling smoke marks his echoing laughter as G flies free to meet our ancestors. Some call him Geronimo, but we call him G. We'll honor his memory with our good work. Spread wings in freedom, G. Now you are free.
Yes, and just the way Brother G is free now, so is Brother Pete O'Neill. He's free in his exile, in the midst of his exile. That brother's free. I'd also like to announce that Kansas City will be honored to be the site for the 48th anniversary of the founding of the Black Panther Party, and this is going to take place in October right here in Kansas City. And it's for the community. We're going to have book signings. We're going to have film festivals. We're going to have entertainment. we're going to have things that will help people know the true history of what the Black Panther Party has been nationally, internationally, and locally. So this will be announced. It's going to be very student friendly, and I'm going to urge elders to bring their young people, all communities to come. So the different venues will be announced later, but y'all stay tuned for that, okay? Yes, yes. Thank y'all for this opportunity, and I hope some of y'all gonna get on that mic.
You've been listening to Charlotte O'Neill talking about conscious hip-hop and a variety of other subjects. We're going to take a short break. You're listening to the All Souls Forum. We owe you some messages. We will be back with the question and answer period very shortly. Stay with us.
Support for KKFI provided by the American Jazz Museum's Jamming at the Gym Jazz Series, featuring the Lifetime Achievement Concert with Dr. Nathan Davis Ensemble with George Cables, Abraham Laborio, and Leonard Harper on Saturday, April 19th, 8 p.m. at the Gym Theater in the 18th and Vine District. Further details at AmericanJazzMuseum.org.
Our first meeting was in Kansas City. I told the great audience that packed the hall that when their coal glowed red in their fires, it was the blood of the workers. You are being warmed and made comfortable with human blood, I said.
The Ludlow Massacre occurred on Easter Sunday, April 20th, 1914. In observance of the centennial, Tell Somebody will rebroadcast the radio documentary Remembering Ludlow Thursday, April 17th at 9 a.m. right after Democracy Now!
Dr. Vandana Shiva will be at Unity Temple on the Plaza on Thursday to discuss the value of diversity in nature and in society, as well as how the monoculture of the mind can destroy that diversity at every level. She will share how Gardens of Hope protect seed freedom and food democracy. Can't make it to the Plaza? Then tune in to KKFI for a special live broadcast Thursday at 7 p.m. right after the Heartland Labor Forum.
This week on The Bioneers, Revolution from the Heart of Nature.
Hundreds and hundreds of companies have said that they don't want to buy products from the last endangered forests on Earth. They want to buy recycled products.
I'm Neil Harvey. This week it's Zipporah Berman and the Forest Lifeboat. From Spirit Bears to Victoria's Dirty Secret on The Bioneers, Revolution from the Heart of Nature.
Friday morning at 9:30. Right after Between the Lines.
Did you know that you can donate your unwanted car, boat, truck, or motorcycle to KKFI Radio and get a tax deduction for your donation? Find out more by calling KKFI at 816-931-3122. This is Pat Fisher from Kansas City, a volunteer for 90.1 FM KKFI, our community radio station.
Hi, welcome to All Souls.
Well,
we're so
thank you.
Pleased to hear your personal story.
Thank you.
But I do realize it's my chance to ask a resident of Africa,
mm-hmm.
What has to happen in Africa, because I know you're a student of the world, what has to happen inside Africa to stop the terrible genocide, the starvation, the terrible conditions that we see in Africa on the news? And I do know there are people there to help. But so often we hear stories about how they either have to flee to escape being killed, or they remain and killed, these volunteers. So give us your side on what has to happen.
Well, sister, I tell you, that harkens back to the way the Black Panther Party and other progressive movements were depicted in the news media. You know, you don't have all that genocide taking place the way they depict it on the news media. Yeah, you have some wars, huh? But it's not like everybody's hacking up everybody. It's not like people are starving. I'm telling you, I always tell people, don't believe the hype as far as what you see on the news media. It's the same thing the way sometimes how communities hear are depicted on the news media. You would think that everybody is a drug dealer or killing up each other or abusers. It's just not like that, especially not where I come from. I mean, we live in abundance as far as food goes. Where's the lady who was answering that? Because I want to look at her. Yes. Yes, you know, so... You know, a lot of times people think, oh, we got to go there and do this and save the Africans. You know, sister, it's not like that. It really isn't. I'm not saying don't do what we can to aid people, but the way the news media shows you, many places is not like that. Many places in Africa are very, very peaceful. And we also have to get away from this concept of looking at Africa like it's one country. You know, a lot of people actually think that, you know, forgetting that there are so many countries there with their own governments, with their own militaries, with their own this and that. And I maintain if there are wars going on, and forgive me, y'all, America got something to do with it. I'm sorry, because it's in America's interest a lot of times to supply arms, because that, you know, the military is one of the ways that America makes money. You know, don't y'all boo me off the stage. But that is my opinion as a lay woman, a lay community activist, a mother, a daughter, and a wife. You know, do some more research. There's some alternative news networks that you can look at. For instance, Democracy Now. Y'all know about Democracy Now, Amy Goodman. You'll be able to get a more balanced way of looking at not only Africa, but the world. If you don't depend on CNN and NBC and ABC and all those kind of networks, you know. It's the same thing when we were Panthers. Sometimes they would report. We'd have rallies, for example. And we would read on there was violence at the rally. There were maybe 70 people, when in fact it might have been 200 people. We'd say, where did they get this kind of news? You got to be very discerning when you look at the news media, sister. Thank you for that question, and I love the spirit that you asked that in. But there is something that you can help directly with. Brother P just announced that we're going solar in our village at UAACC. If any of y'all want to help support that, you can. Just go. That's a tangible way you can help change things in Africa, huh? Just go to Leaders of Tomorrow Children's Home, and you can make a donation there. Thank you. Yes, brother.
I wondered if you could compare and contrast the methodology used during the 50s and 60s of getting youth involved in worthwhile issues and getting youth involved now in worthwhile issues. Especially I'm interested in how people may view the necessity for charismatic leaders and thinking that there were more of them back then than there are now, and sort of putting the responsibility on those leaders rather than doing for oneself. I know that you touched on that previously when you address young people.
Yes, thank you for that. You know, and I always tell young people, don't wait on a charismatic leader. It's just not necessary. This is a new age, you know, and the youth have something that we didn't have. They got the internet. They got the social media that they can use in positive ways. So, you know, a youth might want to mentor two young people, help them with their reading, huh? And before you know it, you got a reading group, and you can spread the word about that. Another youth might want to, like I said, help somebody with gardening, you know, and build off of that. You know, I think the time has moved on to something else, you know, and that you can't deal with the situations of today the way we did back in the day. It's different, you know, it's just different. You can still have that spirit of volunteerism and that spirit of activism, but you got to have a different approach. And to wait on some kind of charismatic leader, you know, who might not even be born yet, you know, that's just wasting too much time when we are running out of time. You know, really. That's my opinion. I do like to think, and actually I know, that when I go on these tours to these different cities and I'm able to touch these young people both spiritually and with a wand of activism, I think it has changed a whole lot of lives. So it's up to us, we knowers. This is what I like to refer to, we people who know what the deal is, who have some ideals on how to change things. I like to call us the knowers, huh? It's our duty to do what we can. And I'm certainly not waiting on a charismatic leader. I know what needs to be done. We all know what needs to be done. Let's just do it. Roll up our sleeves and do it. I hope that answered your question, okay? Thank you, brother. Yes, sister.
I've got to ask a personal question. And before I do it, I want to tell you that this past week I've had my first ever Tanzania coffee.
Ooh.
I bought it at 10,000 Villages in Overland Park.
Okay.
And it is the smoothest, most wonderful. The fact that you can drink that every day, I envy you.
It is good. Thank you.
Oh, fabulous. I have my very first trip coming up to Africa this summer. I will be in Rwanda for 2 weeks. I'm going over to speak at a human rights conference there, and I will have the opportunity to do some day travel, and I know I can get to Tanzania, and I would like your recommendation on what to do with that limited time so that I can enjoy the country the most, and I won't know anything but English.
Well, that's fine, and I invite you. I'm going to give you your first Kiswahili word, karibu. That means welcome, and I'd love to invite you to visit our center. And our center is located right, it's like, it's in Arusha, which is the hub of all the national parks, the game parks, in all that area. You know, so if you come to our center, we can help arrange, if you're interested in going like to the Serengeti or Ngorongoro or Mount Kilimanjaro, or if you just want to chill, sister, at our center. And if you don't want to stay at the center, there's a hotel that's near us. But please come and visit. I'll give you my card. You would love it. Okay, all right, yeah. So remember that word, karibu, that means welcome, and you would answer asante, which means thank you. Okay, all right.
Do you want to tell us just a little bit about how people have seen the documentary and heard you talk, but do you want to tell us a little bit just how you and Pete met and then a little bit about what the issues that prompted you to feel that you needed to move and to flee and go to Tanzania?
Yeah. I'm so touchy about that word, flee, because I know everybody uses that word, you know, but it still kind of makes me feel a little funny, because...
Tell me what word I should use.
We left. We
okay.
left.
Okay.
We left under our own mobility. We left as a part of a very strong decision that we made together, even though we thought that we would be back in like 2 years. Huh? But it was 20 years before I came back for the first time, and Brother Pete still isn't able to come back, and that's the crux of what you're talking about. I mentioned how he was one of the victims of COINTELPRO, and please, if y'all don't know about COINTELPRO, look it up. The counterintelligence insurgency program that was started by J. Edgar Hoover, who was the head of the FBI, and who considered the Black Panther Party to be the greatest threat to the internal security of America, which still blows my mind that he would think that. It couldn't have been because we believed in self-defense. No way. You know, when you consider that America has the biggest military, the biggest police force on the whole planet, I maintain that we were considered a threat to the internal security of America the same way Martin Luther King was, the same way Malcolm X was, the same way John Lennon was. Why? Because we were promoting interaction. We were looking at things on a humanistic level. We were drawing all these young people together to work together no matter what race, ethnic background, or gender. That was the threat, sister. So, so Brother Pete, we used to say, called a case. And one of the cases that he caught was carrying a gun across state line, which he did not do. They never even found the gun with him, huh? They never accused him of an actual crime. As a matter of fact, they had sold the gun to somebody else and had to buy it back for the trial, huh? During his trial, which was full of all kind of errors, and which Dr. Paul Magnarella worked on for years and years and is continuing to work on it, presenting briefs to the court and all this. He made it known that the main witness against Brother Pete was a paid political, was a paid informer for the FBI. Huh? There was so many discrepancies in that case. So he knew that there was no way that he would get out of prison if he went into prison. There's a historical precedent had already been set where once they had a Panther or any of the other progressive leaders in prison, they would pile up and pile up more and more years. He was told repeatedly that once he was in there, the only way he was going to come out was in a box. Now, who would want to even risk that? Huh? Chairman Mao, we used to read the Red Book, and one of the things Chairman Mao used to say is know when to retreat and know when to go forward. Huh? Well, we were making a strategic temporary retreat that actually has been a path for us to go forward and been a path to change lives, not only our own, but hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of young people who we have influenced over the years. What was the other part of your question, sister?
I was just wondering if you could comment about how you and Pete first met each other, but let me comment something about what you said right now, and that is, one of the first things that occurred to me is, what a loss. You know, what a loss we've had by, but then, in your case, what a gain. Yeah. What a gain that the people that you're in contact with there have had. But I was just wondering if you could tell us a little bit about being this teenager who met this Black Panther person.
Yes, yeah, Black Panther person. And this Black Panther person, I can remember when I was 18 years old, I had cut out pictures of him and put it on my wall in my bedroom along with other pictures, and I never thought I would actually meet him, because when I joined the party, he was on like a speaking tour, so I had been there like a month, I think, before I actually met him. I'm not going to go into details how we met. One of the reasons is because I'm writing my autobiography, so y'all stay tuned for that. Yeah, y'all stay tuned for that. But I will say that he has been an extreme blessing in my life, you know. And he has really, really molded me into the woman that I am. And I don't know what I would do without him in my life. I hope that I would be strong enough to carry on, and that he would be strong enough to get. I mean, you know, you always talk about a unit. You know, I always talk about how our we makes up such a strong unit and such a strong example. And I think one of the reasons for that is because community service has always been the thing that we share. You know, I mean, I'm a musician. I'm an artist. I go all over the world all the time. Brother Pete, he likes to go to bed at 8:30 or 9 o'clock at night. You know, he likes to stay there right there at UAACC. He's a homebody, you know. But I'm always sent out on our missions to fundraise and to do this and to do that. And we support each other in that. And that's what I always tell young people. Trust is the first thing. Being friends is the second thing, and community service is definitely the thing that will keep your relationship cemented. Yeah. Yes, brother.
I wanted to ask kind of a historical question about the Ujamaa program that Nyerere was doing in the 70s up till he left, I guess, in 85. I read a lot about that, both pro and con, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are on the villagization program that was going on.
Yeah, well, I'm not a politician, of course, but I do remember Ujamaa, and I do remember that there was a spirit that was running rife throughout the country where many people were for the Ujamaa movement. Some people weren't for that because they were the ones who perhaps had these huge farms that were being nationalized, you know. A lot of people say that the economy started going down some during that era. I don't know if it did or not. To me, the economy started really going down when they opened the doors to the World Bank and the IMF. You know, because when they did that, and President Nyerere said he would never do that, and he never did, but the presidents following him after he retired did open the doors to that. And when they did, the IMF and the World Bank demanded that the country stop subsidizing education. One of the main things that supports a country's growth, and also medical. So that really changed things. But I remember when we first came to Tanzania, we would see, you know, people sitting under trees teaching the elders, you know, and there was just a spirit of camaraderie. That's one of the things that really drew us to Tanzania was the socialist policy, you know, which had to do with Ujamaa. Sometime perhaps we had on rosy-colored glasses. I don't know. You can never satisfy everybody with any policy, any government policy that you might have. But I and many, many, many people all over the world still have huge respect for President Nyerere and his efforts at trying to uplift Tanzania. Another thing that he did that I think is just beautiful, he made sure that with Tanzania's 125 communities or tribes who all have their own language, he insisted that everybody also speak Kiswahili, which has been a unifying factor. And my sister, the sister who's coming, many people do speak English, so you're not going to have a problem with that. Even at our community center, we teach English. So if you're going to be at the center, and I always tell everybody this, be prepared to roll up your sleeves, whether it's for one day or 2 days, and share whatever kind of knowledge you want to share, whatever your passion is, huh? It can be anything, because, you know, we have a set curriculum, but when somebody comes who wants to share something different, we make sure that you have that opportunity. So don't forget. Okay.
Okay, let's have this be the last question.
My name is Sam Mann. I pastor St. Mark's Church, which we embrace in our history proudly that the first breakfast program was in our building.
Yes.
But that's not why I'm here. That does help identify me, and I want to thank the Unitarian Church for providing this opportunity for Sister Charlotte. But, you know, we've done a grave injustice. Dr. King has said that one of the ways injustice perpetuates itself is for just people to do nothing. And there's still an item on the agenda that I hope that all souls will embrace. I know Brother Pete does not want a pardon for that injustice, but there is an effort now led by Alvin Sykes and Steve Penn to get the charges dropped. No, not the pardon, but the charges dropped.
Okay, the charges dropped.
The COINTELPRO issue. And there's energy around that. And I hope that we as Kansas City, the folks who love justice in Kansas City, will rise up and begin to redo or reconnect. Now, I'm getting ready to say something. If it's wrong, please tell me to be quiet. But, you know, he hasn't seen his mother on this soil. And that's a grave injustice.
Yes.
And needs to be corrected. She's an older woman, still a young woman, but an older woman.
Yeah.
And I hope that somehow we will, that you would join this effort to right a wrong. Even though it's turned into such a flower.
Well, thank you very much. That's a good note to conclude
on. I appreciate that. Thank you.
And As I said before, we would hope that sometime he could come back
And sit right here
and be here again. Yes. On behalf of the forum, let me give you our forum mug.
You've been listening to Charlotte O'Neill. She's the wife of Pete O'Neill. She runs the United African Alliance Community Center, where Pete is currently still in exile from the United States. She shared with us her journey growing up in Kansas City, Kansas, meeting Pete O'Neill, becoming a member of the Black Panther Party, and then heading to Africa, where Pete and her still live. Entertaining show, plus you had some hip-hop music, too. This program was recorded on Sunday, March the 30th, at the All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church in Kansas City, Missouri. This program is produced and edited for broadcast each week by Barry Lee. Thank you to Rita Norton and the staff at All Souls for their help in producing this program for you. Tune in again next week, the same time, same place, for another All Souls Forum. You're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.